Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We welcome in Mike DeCourcy, college basketball columnist for the Sporting News. Mike, what's going on, man? How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I got a chance to share the evening last night with the number one team in college basketball, and got a chance to talk to what I consider the number two player in college basketball, Grant Williams. So, things could be a whole lot worse.
Yeah, I noticed last night I saw you tweet out that you hadn't been to Knoxville to a game to see Tennessee in Thompson Bowling Arena in quite some time. What was your takeaway from the atmosphere, the vibe there in Knoxville?
Well, I think that, first of all, that they've done a great job with Thompson Bowling. They may have rehabbed it before I made my last trip back in. It didn't make as big an impression on me as it did this time. Maybe I spent more time in the arena. I don't know, but it's in great shape. I tweeted out that it's aged better than I have, for sure. and you know, what I came away with last night, it was not a great game. Missouri showed a lot of competitive fire, and that Tennessee looked somewhat like they were transacting business, which is, I have no problem with that at their stage. I mean, they've played a bunch of games in a row against teams that are not elite. There are elite games coming, and they're aware of that, and you can't fool college kids. They've already beaten this team badly. It would have been nice for them if they had played better and beaten them badly again, but in the end, it's not going to matter. The key now is to make sure that you get wins, that you don't foul up and lose a game that you should win. And that happens. I mean, Michigan State did it, you know, like 20 minutes before the Vols took the court. Yeah. So, I think, and you say, well, what's Illinois compared to Mizzou, right? Illinois lost to Mizzou by double digits. So that just shows how easily that could happen to anybody, and the Vols took care of business.
It's interesting, this Tennessee team. You know, basketball is a sport, college basketball, of the big-time recruits and the top 100 guys, and they're winning without any of those guys.
It's fascinating. I wrote about that today, and I did some research on it. Like, I did not go back and look at every single team that's been ranked number one since recruiting analysis became a thing, which was probably within the last 20 years or so. It's more time than I wanted to invest in the polls. So I'm just going to tell you, there's never been a team with this recruiting profile that's been number one. And if anybody wants to tell me I'm wrong, go do the research and prove me wrong. Because they have zero players in their rotation that were ranked in the top 125 by 24/7. Zero. It's incredible. Duke, which is in competition for that spot, has three of last year's top five. It's ridiculous. So, you know, I spoke today at the Knoxville Tip-Off Club, and Desmond Oliver, one of the assistant coaches, stood up before me, and he talked about how, look, these guys were better than, you know, they were four stars, and, you know, they're not really all, you know, that's not really a true narrative about us. And then he, you know, and because assistant coaches are really busy people, and I totally get that, and I'm sure the club did too, he gave his very, very good speech, and then he left. And I said, I'm glad he left, because I'm going to tell you, he's wrong. They really are just all three-star guys. Now, they probably shouldn't have been, but they are. That's what they were. And, you know, the interesting thing about coaches always, and I noticed this in 2002 when Maryland won the national championship without a McDonald's All-American. They became the first team in the McDonald's All-American era, so to speak, to ever do that, to win a championship without one. And I talked to Dave Dickerson and Jimmy Patsos for a story about that, and they were kind of offended in the same way as Desmond was. That, you know, they feel protective of their players. But here's the thing: you can't change the reality of that, and it's doubly complimentary to you as a coach and a coaching staff. One, you were great scouts to see what you saw in Grant Williams and Admiral and all the rest of them, and two, you're great coaches because you're turning these guys who are three-star players into a five-star team.
Mike, sometimes we get lost within the forest. So that's another reason why I wanted to have you on. And you spent time with these guys over the last 24 hours. I'm curious, when Rick Barnes got that job, the narrative was, okay, here's an older guy. He's going to Tennessee, and he's going to ride it out, and, you know, no big deal. But it has been anything but that. And it's been like a life-changing thing for Rick Barnes as well as these players. Do you get a sense of that being around them the last couple of days?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think everybody, you know, Rob Lanier and Michael Schwartz came with him from Texas, and they hired Desmond. He had most recently been at Charlotte. So those guys all went through that at Texas. And, you know, I think that it at some positions, sometimes they just reach their end it one way or the other, and it needed to probably end at Texas. But the truth is, the narrative on Rick as a coach was always a lie. The idea that, you know, underachiever and all that stuff. And people want to make that about certain people because, you know, the tournament is what it is. And some guys succeeded in it and some guys don't. And, you know, you have LaMarcus Aldridge and you come up and you lose in the regional semifinal, and people look at you like you're some kind of failure. Come on, it's hard to get there.
Yeah.
But what happened to them at Texas, when they started to lose guys that, you know, like Tristan Thompson and Corey Joseph and Avery Bradley, that they recruited thinking, we're going to have these guys for at least a little while. And the reason that really guts your program is that if you recruit Zion Williamson, like, everybody in America knows Zion Williamson is there for 1 year. And the most important person who knows Zion Williamson is only there for 1 year is the next Zion Williamson, if we ever see one of those again. Whoever it is behind him doesn't look and say, well, I'm not going there. They got Zion Williamson. I'll never play. No, he's going to be gone, so you can play. And at Texas, in Rick's final stretch, he had at least three guys that they didn't know were going to leave in a year. And probably the players didn't know they were going to leave in a year. And then they did, and I'm not seeing any of those guys made a mistake or did Texas wrong or anything like that. They've all had good NBA careers, but it affected Texas's ability to be successful going forward and ultimately led Rick to being here.
As you put together your rankings, if you had to fill out your ballot right now for this week's rankings, where would you have Tennessee? Where would you have Duke?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not a poll guy. I do respect that they are where they are. They had, you know, with what they have on their resume, the wins that they have and the only one loss, they deserve their number one ranking. Now, somewhat, the one ranking is a product of momentum, and momentum is somewhat a product of the schedule. I told them today at the tip-off club that you're probably going to lose before the end of the year. You've got two games against Kentucky,
right?
One of them on the road. So you're probably going to lose, and you got LSU, although I think that's a home game. So, but you're probably losing at least one. The trick is to not lose too many so that you lose the one that really matters, and that's the number one seed, wherever it happens to be. You want one of those. So the ranking, it's going to go probably at some point. It doesn't really matter. It's good that you've been there, but the one seed is what you're really playing for.
Tell us what you think about Grant Williams. Curious.
Oh, like I said, I think he's the number two player in college basketball. I don't think that there is a serious competition for player of the year at this point. I think Zion's far enough ahead of everybody that, you know, he would have to really screw up to lose it. And he's not. I mean, last night I think he had 16 and 17 and probably four blocks. So he's not going to lose it. And there's a lot of people that are fans of Tennessee or Wisconsin or whomever that are bothered by that. But look, if you're a first-team All-American, you're one of, like, the one-tenth of 1% in college basketball. It's an incredible honor. And I don't think it's always appreciated for what it is. It's an amazing honor to be a first-team All-American. That's five guys. I mean, conferences are so afraid of picking five guys that they'll pick 10 or 12 for their all-conference teams. And yet, you know, those of us who vote for All-America teams or have All-America teams, we have to pick five. And Grant Williams, again, if he doesn't screw it up, and I fully don't expect that to happen, he's going to be one of those five. It's an amazing honor. And he's earning it at both ends of the floor. defense, he's so versatile as a defender. Offensively, willing passer, capable scorer at so many levels. Not a great three-point shooter. That's okay. He does other things. I saw last night what I thought I saw from Mizzou was I thought that they used his unselfishness against him. Mm-hmm. That they let him be involved in the offense early on and knowing that he's not going to push to get his. And then late in the possession, after they shifted the ball a few times, then it was shut it down, don't let him touch it. So his influence in the offense wasn't profound. I think that's something that they're going to have to look at. Other teams might pick up on. And UT has to maybe be a little bit more insistent at times about getting him the ball in scoring areas when other teams are trying to take that away. But he's having a phenomenal year. And by the way, is a really neat kid. I got a chance to spend 15 minutes with him after the game. It was later. I might have grabbed more, but he was wonderful to talk to.
Welcome back in. 3HL, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone. Visiting with Mike DeCourcy, college basketball columnist for the Sporting News at TSN. Mike, and Mike, we were visiting with you about Grant Williams, and it's interesting. He labels himself as a nerd. Do you think that is a fair characterization after spending 10, 15 minutes with him last night?
Yeah, he's interesting because, like, we sat down in the players' lounge, I guess that we would call it, and there's a glass partition, and on the other side of the glass partition, there's some kind of gaming system. And the first thing he wanted to know, like, he called over, like, the assistant SID and said, can you find out what game he's playing? Because he wanted to play that game, and it wasn't familiar to him, whatever it was. And so he wanted to know what it was so that he could then, get on that system at some point tomorrow or whatever and play that same game. It looked cool to him or whatever. So, I know he's obviously a very gifted student and he's an accomplished musician and all those sorts of things. he's a really special kid. And it doesn't end there. I mean, I asked him, one of the things I asked him, and I didn't get this into my column because it really, really didn't fit the theme, but I asked him, I said, why are you as passionate about basketball as you are when you've got so many other things that you're good at? Like, what was it about the game? And he said that it was something that bit him from an early age. Early on, he sort of played at it. And had fun with it. And then at a certain point when he realized that he was really good at it, it hit him, not just that he could make a lot of money at it, but that it was something that he really had a deep love for. And I really respected that, him having a self-awareness like that.
And the crazy thing is he could come back and do it all again next year.
He could if he wants. And, I don't think that he'll be a first round pick necessarily. I know he'll be a pro.
Yeah.
Jalen Brunson was the best college point guard of the last 10 years, last season. And that season he put up there, nobody had done that in 10 years. And even he was only a second round pick. So I don't know whether I do know that there is sort of if they were able to go out and do something special like win it, the pros love winners. And if they run out of guys that they think are super talented, they might say, hey, we could use a winner like him. So you never know. But I know that he's going to be a pro, and it's just a question for him about, and I think some of it's going to play out based on this season. And, like, if you're a Vols fan and you're worried about him coming back, here's the best scenario. Win it, and then, maybe he goes because he can't do any better than that. So, that's it. If I were a Vols fan, that's what I'd be thinking. I'd be thinking, I hope they win it this year, and, because you got Admiral, and he's gone regardless. So hope they win it this year, and then if he goes, okay, you look what you got.
Well, as they look ahead, you mentioned a couple of tilts with Kentucky. Kentucky seems to be a team that's, Cal's willing to let them stumble a little bit early to see what lessons they can learn. They've won 9 in a row. They're playing great defense. That certainly looms ahead of the Vols just in the SEC.
They're a terrific team, Kentucky, and they have a real competitive spirit, and I'll tell you, two games that reflect that really well were the two road games. The Auburn game, in which they played very, very well for, about 37 minutes. Not every one of those 37 minutes was a work of art, but, 37 really good minutes. And then Auburn, being way down, starts bombing in threes, mm-hmm. and Kentucky still found a way to close, making smart plays, making free throws. not panicking because, you know, Auburn's thrown in 30 footers. And then really the opposite on Saturday at Florida, they didn't play well at all for 33 minutes or so. I had somebody point out the run began like at 13 minutes of the second half, but they still weren't great in that stretch. They didn't really get good in that game until about 7 were left. And then they were very good down the stretch and closed it out beautifully and built the lead up. So they showed two ways to win. And one of the really interesting anecdotes from that Florida game was with about 2:07 left, they were up 9. They gave up a bucket. It's now 7. And they let the ball sit there because their clock's going to keep running. And they're understanding that you do the math on that. And, you know, all the seconds that come off are fewer seconds they have to cut into our lead, so to speak. And so they let it sit there for a while, and then at a point where you knew if you let it sit there any longer, they would probably blow the whistle, they went and picked it up, and then they handed it to the referee. There's a couple more seconds that get blown away, and there's nothing the refs can do about that. They can't say, oh, don't you give it to me. No, they're allowed. You know, so you can make sure that everything's cool, so you give it to the ref, and he gives it back to you. More seconds. These are freshmen that are figuring this stuff out. Now, they don't figure it out on their own. Their coach is brilliant. He's a Hall of Famer. He's taught it to them, but they're getting it. Under pressure, on the road. That was really impressive to me.
We've all been talking about, Mike, Tennessee, Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, Kentucky. Is there somebody else out there that you think has a legit chance to win the national championship?
Oh, I think Michigan can win it. Okay. Now, they have not played well offensively of late. I think there's still a lot more in them offensively. Jordan Poole, who I believe is very gifted and a future pro, has really struggled to, not so much to make shots, but to get to shots. I think their offense has gotten a little bit off course, but they're still 20-2 or 21-2 at this point. Won a good road game last night at Rutgers. They have the ability to do it. Now they have to probably play, you know, a little bit above themselves as opposed to Duke, which just basically has to get to its level. And, you know, that's not always easy for Duke, but they just have to get to their level. Gonzaga has to get to its level. There are more talented teams than Michigan. There are more talented teams than Tennessee, but they both, you know, I think have enough that if they get the right circumstance and they play their best basketball, that they could do it.
What about Virginia? Just because they can just smother you.
And they're great offensively too. I mean, I know their rep is as a defensive team, but much as the Vols have gone from being a team that a year ago had to really strangle the game to beat great people, and that's what they did. I mean, even in the Loyola game, they did it. They just didn't score enough.
Right.
This is a better offensive Virginia team, just as this is a better offensive Tennessee team. Virginia has, you know, not DeAndre Hunter is a sophomore now. He's a really dynamic player. Guy and Jerome, the two guards, both can make shots. Both can create their own shot and create for others. And adding Braxton Key, you know, I still don't understand the whole, you know, like transferring and being eligible thing, but it's really made a difference for them because Jack Salt is like, you know, the guy on, I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones, the guy with the mask and like, he's like, they call him the Mountain or whatever. That's Jack Salt. I mean, he's like, you run into him and you are screened, but offensively around, you know, he's not really much. I mean, he can score around the bucket, but he doesn't have a great game, but Braxton Key comes in and he can make shots. So now when they go to the bench to get another big guy, they bring in another component to their offense that they never had before. And I think it only makes them better.
Is there some school out there nobody's thinking of with a fun-loving nun or some great backstory that we can look forward to in March, maybe making a run?
There'll be some of that. I don't know whether it'll go all the way to the Final Four this time. But, you know, I mean, teams like Wofford in the Southern Conference, you know, I know that that East Tennessee State and Steve Forbes are going to want to get in the way of that.
Maybe Lipscomb from Nashville.
They've played really well this year. They're going to be a team that nobody wants to be there. They're 15 or 14 for sure. I don't know whether, you know, at Murray State with Ja Morant, who wants that, right? I don't know exactly how hot, you know, they obviously have to get in because Belmont's terrific.
Right.
And Jacksonville State's playing great. So yeah. No guarantee Murray gets there, but if they do, to have to go face a lottery pick, this is a very good year for mid-major teams. You know, the ones we mentioned, San Francisco, don't know that we're going to get all of them in the field, Buffalo, but they're, you know, whichever ones of those make it, they're going to be real threats.
Mike DeCourcy, college basketball columnist for the Sporting News at TSN. Mike, thank you for the time, man. Great stuff. We really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it very much. Thanks, fellas.